listening to the Patty Vasquez Show, and we are so happy that you're joining us. We are in the Allstate Skyline studio, and those of you who've been listening to this show for the last couple of years, you know that in April of 2016, the state of Illinois cut off about $26 million to important services for citizens of the state of Illinois, all over the state, actually. Anything from Meals on Wheels to smoking cessation programs, Autism One, the Epilepsy Foundation, and that's just a handful. There were a lot of providers of important services that started to not get paid. Actually, many of them continue to catch up. And there are ongoing ramifications from that budget crisis that the state endured for more than 2 years. And one of the incredible human beings that I met on all those journeys to Springfield was the CEO of Day One Pact, Steve Boisey. Hey, Stephen, how are you doing tonight?
Hi, Patty. Pretty good. Thank you.
I got a message from you a few months ago, and it was, you're in crisis. You continue to be in crisis, as do the folks that you provide services
yes,
for.
Yes, that's correct.
Tell us a little bit first, before we get into what's going on, the kind of services that you provide for in the community that you work with.
Sure. We're located in Geneva and Lisle, Illinois, and we provide what I think most people would understand as case management services to families who have children of all ages with developmental disabilities access to those services. So what we do is we screen people to assure that they meet the qualifications for services. Then we link them to different types of service providers. Maybe they're looking for a residential program, a place to stay. Maybe they're looking for a job. But we'll connect them with that provider who does that work. And then on a long-term basis, we'll monitor their care to make sure, first of all, that they're getting the services that they need. Mm-hmm. And secondly, that they're happy with those services. Because just like you and I, you know, we might hire a gardener, for example, and realize that all they're planting are dandelions, right? At which point we'll get a new gardener. But for people with disabilities, they sometimes don't have that same voice and ability to speak for themselves. So we act as their advocate for on a long-term basis for their program satisfaction. And if they're not happy, we'll get them to a new provider. And that is a lifelong relationship as long as they're living in our area. We've served people for over 20 years.
Well, that was one of the things I was so impressed by when I first met you, was that you do provide services. You know, when Declan was born, we had a social worker come to our house, and it was overwhelming. I didn't know what we were supposed to, you know, be seeking out, what were our options, what Declan needed. And then, you know, every step of the way is sort of this start and stop. You know, you
right.
get some services and then it changes. Maybe a therapist decides to move away or something like that. And then you're kind of left hanging. And we never really had a centralized communicate, like someone to be our point person for all of that.
Right.
And then when I found out, not only do you provide that kind of service that for the communities that you are working with, but that you also work all through their lives. I mean,
right.
I remember
remember
when I first met you, you were talking to me about how you have some folks like maybe if Griffin ever wants to move to another state,
yes.
that they could, you would work with that family in order to maybe place someone like Declan.
Right, we would help to refer them. But
right.
we start with kids as soon as they're born. If they have an evident disability at mm-hmm. birth, a neonatal unit, if they're a preemie, we get an automatic referral, and we'll continue to work with them through age 3. And then typically during the school years, the school takes the lead on that, mm-hmm. but certainly by the time they're 18, we're ready to go to get them into the state system and be that consistent partner, because you're absolutely right. Turnover rates for services in the community are extraordinarily high. We can become that central point of communication and stability in that family's life. And it is a lifelong issue. And I should say, we do also have one other service, and that is that we provide guardianship and trust services mm-hmm. for parents who are able to set up special needs trusts for their family member.
That's so important. And for those just joining us, we're talking to Steve Boisey. He is the CEO of Day One Pact. And I am very fortunate to have another care service provider in my community who I've gotten to know better in the same way as far as going down to Springfield, talking to people. And what I'm struck by, first of all, is how many people don't necessarily understand how crucial the services you provide or coordinate are, not just for the families and the individuals who receive them, but for the community at large. That's something that I try
right.
to, because a lot of people, you know, my listeners know that there have been nights when people get mad at me. They're like, oh, here you are asking for the state to give you money. That's not what it's about, is it?
No, it isn't. From my perspective, it's about helping families, and more importantly, individuals with disabilities, to live fully engaged lives. That's what every parent wants mm-hmm. for their child. That's what every individual wants, to whatever degree they're capable of expressing that. People want to be involved with others. It's not just going to school, but it's developing friendships, building lifelong relationships, beginning a skill set. And then once you graduate from school, it is finding your place in the world, because we all want to find our place in the world.
Right.
And every parent wants to know that their child has a place in this world. I know I'm speaking touchy-feely words, but I'm a parent.
Yeah, I mean, all the feels. Get me in all the feels. And would we prefer that, one, that there was no need for the services that you provide, or that we lived in a world where things were easy and everyone understood or was tolerant or accepting of the community, that there was an easier path?
Sure.
Of course.
Sure.
No one is looking to take advantage of anything. But when you invest in people, and this is something I heard Senator Dan Katowski say on the floor of the General Assembly, when you invest in people, you save lives. And that's what we're talking about.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, we're experiencing, I think, a major shift in how we conceptualize services for people with developmental disabilities. 60 years ago, 70 years ago, we thought of institutionalization. Well, we'll just have them go to a state-operated facility, and they'll be taken care of, and they'll be safe. 30 years ago, we talked about, well, let's set up these group homes, and they'll all go to a daycare center during the day or a workshop, and everybody will be happy. But, you know, today's generation of parents and individuals who've been mainstreamed all their life in school, that ain't enough. To use a vernacular. You know, they want more. They want a real full life. Now, that may not mean a 40-hour-a-week job, but it will mean going out into the community, going to the coffee shop, seeing a movie, working at the library for a couple of days a week, a variety of things, just like any of us would like.
And for those individuals that do go on to work, in order to get to that point, you need to have everything in place to help them reach their potential. And if they're not, you also, you know, psychologically, it is better for everyone involved, whether it's their families, the neighbors, you know, and you forget how much of an impact individuals like the people that you care for, the people that I know in my life, in particular Declan, he has an impact on our community. Like, when we go to we miss church, people will tell me and Steve, like, oh, you weren't here last week. We really missed having you here. People, it makes a difference.
Right. Yeah. There's a hole.
Yeah.
That isn't being filled. It is amazing. We often think about how relationships are developed and how that person has an impact. And some people think that people with disabilities don't impact us that way.
Right.
There's nothing further from the truth. It's not just an opportunity to be, in my vernacular, to be a blessing to that person, but how that person can be a blessing to you.
Mm-hmm.
It is a mutual blessing association.
It is the biggest gift I have received as being the mother of Declan, besides his love and that look I get in his eyes where he looks like he has a crush on me, but he can't say, you know, I love you, Mommy, because he cannot speak.
Right.
And I don't even, you know, I don't know intellectually what words he knows, understands, or you know, what that means to him.
Right.
But, you know, yesterday, he was holding my hands and squeezing my fingertips and looking at me longer than he has, you know, forever. And it takes my breath away.
He was speaking to you.
No doubt about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, no, I agree completely. And for, you know, so many families to be in jeopardy, which is why you're in tonight, I should have been having you on more regularly so we could talk about all the great events that you used to have. And we're going to let the audience know why some of those have come to an end.
Okay.
And how they can perhaps get involved and what steps you and other organizations are taking to protect families and help them reach their potential and have access to the kind of life, as you mentioned, anything that we all dream of having, which is being connected,
absolutely,
being as independent as possible. We are talking to Steve Boise. He is the CEO of Day One Pact. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show on 720 WGN. Our conversation continues after this break. You are listening to the Patty Vasquez Show, and I am hanging out in the Allstate Skyline Studio with CEO of Day One Pact, Steve Boise, and we met several years ago, and we obviously have a lot of mutual, appreciation for the kind of work that you do, and that my ability to at least inform people, share the stories of, you know, the community that so desperately needs to be. We're not asking for handouts. We're talking about fundamental rights when it comes to being treated with respect and dignity.
Opportunity.
Yeah.
That's what all of us want, right?
Right.
We want a fair shot at becoming who we are and finding our place in the world. It isn't about, dig deeper for another 10 cents.
Right.
It's about, hey, I think I could do that job. Would you give me a chance? And right. Yeah, maybe I'll need a little help. But you know what? Most of us need help one way or another. And the joy that that can bring, anytime you see somebody succeeding at something that they love doing, I think we all respond in a positive way. We say, wow, what a great opportunity.
Right. And that takes a lot of work from the family, from the support services. And I hesitate to bring this up, but what always comes up for me are the most tragic stories that remind me of how important this is. Yeah. The audience knows that I've talked about a mother in California who took the life of her 4-year-old son because all the money that her family had spent on autism services didn't work, and she was planning on taking her own life. And I called you one day, not long after the tragedy that struck your community. There were siblings who were living in a group home. On the weekends, they would go home to their parents. They were adult children in there. Well, they were adults in their 50s, but they were the parents. The mother was terminally ill, and the father, on one of their breaks home, took all four of their lives.
That's correct.
And that's the extreme case of what I mean when people lose hope and the support, or thinking that there's nothing they could do. And without services and the help and the community that you have, a lot of families would be lost. And now you are in jeopardy of not being able to be there for so many people. Tell us what's going on.
It's a long story that I'll make short. About a year and a half ago, in the previous governor's administration, we began to hear talk about the desire on the part of the state to consolidate some of our services. There are currently 17 agencies like ours across the state. And as you may remember, the state was having some fiscal issues at that time. So one of the thoughts was, well, if we cut down on the number of agencies, we'll save money. And so that started some discussion in state government on how to do that. And they made it a boarded attempt to start this over a year ago, and then they couldn't figure out how they wanted to do those grants, and they stopped. But then this past summer, they actually did release a new grant opportunity. And at that point in time, they and this gets a little confusing, so I'll try not to make it too.
Well, you're in the thick of it, so I understand that you've got all this going on. Go ahead.
So they released this, it's called a NOFO, Notice of Funding Opportunity. It's basically a grant opportunity. And it was going to reduce the number of areas from 17 to 12 across the state. And all of us had the opportunity to bid on these contracts.
So I'm asking questions during the way. So when you say reduce the agencies from 17 to 12, that means that 12 agencies would now be responsible for much bigger areas to provide services?
By and large, some areas were untouched. The way that they consolidated the areas was interesting. I'll put it that way.
Okay.
Some in Chicago had their geographic
areas. It was a little cockamamie. Do you want to say cockamamie?
Yeah, okay, cockamamie. That's a good word, too. Good old-fashioned word. Screwy. And maybe
there
that's the word I'd use.
Hey, I like that.
Okay, that's over the air, right? Okay. So they released this, and this was the first time they'd ever bid it out in almost 30 years. So those of us who've been in the business for quite a while, we had expressed some concerns over the construction of this grant proposal and what they were asking for, but it's state government, so you really can't fight it at that point. So we bid on it, as a number of other agencies did, and on January 2nd of this past year, we discovered, we were informed, that we had not won the bid for our area. It was interesting because they couldn't find our email address. They had to call us. After 3 years, they still hadn't.
And that makes you think, well, how well organized is this process?
I think that's a fair question that someone would have.
Right.
So at that point, we were devastated, to be certain. What was interesting and that none of us expected was that the state, at the time it released the results of this decision, they also released the scoring sheets for the decision, which they said they weren't going to do. And as we began to dig into those scoring sheets, we discovered some discrepancies in the pattern of scores, because we saw them for the whole state. That led us to question the accuracy of the whole process. But we don't really have a way of appealing that. There was an appeal process that we did pursue, but all the appeal would do was to look at whether or not the state followed its procedures, you know, when it released the NOFO, when it scored it, when it made the decision. So it's more a process review.
Okay.
At that point, a few of us as agencies who had lost our contracts wondered, what do we do? Because this is going to change the system entirely. Families that we worked with for 20 years,
right,
it's going to be a major change for them. So we began to think, what other rights, what other course of action could we take? And that's when we started to work with an agency downstate to pass a bill in the Illinois House of Representatives to stop this process from occurring. That was Illinois House Bill 844. We worked with Representative Jay Hoffman in the East St. Louis area, and this bill was passed out of the House committee on a unanimous vote to go before the full House. And we were able to obtain over 1,200 witness slips.
And let people know why that's important, because I think that a lot of our listeners perhaps don't understand the process of making sure that when, and that's why we talk about Springfield and the process,
right,
is that you can be involved. If there's something that's important to you, you can add your name to a witness
right.
list.
Any bill that is before the House or Senate for passage has the opportunity for the public to say whether they agree with it or they don't, whether they support it or oppose it. That's called a witness slip. Now, if you look at the average number of witness slips for your average bill, let's say we want to rename the Chicago River the Mayor Daley River, for example, that probably wouldn't, well, maybe that would get a lot of witness slips, but the average witness slip count is probably 40 or 50. It's not a what
Whoa.
I would call a heater bill,
yeah.
okay?
Yeah.
Gun control, which was another bill under consideration, got over 1,000 witness slips, at least the last time I checked. We got over 1,200 witness slips. That is a huge amount.
Right, okay.
It was the second most of any bill that I went through them all this past spring.
And a lot of those folks are families, I'm guessing,
absolutely.
In the community.
It's not just professionals.
Right.
In fact, the majority of people are family members
right.
who said, no, we don't want this change to occur. We don't think it's the right time. We don't think it's being handled well, a number of reasons. And we want this to stop. And that's what that bill was going to accomplish. On the last day of the House session before their spring break, unfortunately, the legislator did not call the bill for a final vote.
Was there any reason why Representative Homan that he gave as to why the bill wasn't called? Did he say, you know, we're going to get to this later, or has it been shelved permanently?
It has been put back into committee, and that's all I know at this point.
Okay, so it's in committee. All right,
yeah.
I'm just trying to figure out who to call.
So at that point, we decided that we couldn't wait for the legislature to make a decision.
In the meantime, you're not able to...
We're on a countdown to losing our funding
right.
Of $3 million and losing services for over 4,000 people in our area. And services that, without sounding too proud, but I am proud of my agency. I'm proud of my staff. We have one of the best agencies in the state, if you look at it from a statistical standpoint.
Well, and the people that I know that receive services or have worked with you, I hear nothing but amazing things. That's why I told you. I was like, I don't know if I can move to Lyle, but I would think about it just to be able to work with PACT One.
Yeah, yeah. We've had
Day
great
One
staff.
PACT. My apologies. Yeah.
And so we got together with two other agencies downstate, and we filed a lawsuit. This lawsuit is modeled after another lawsuit that was filed by the agency in East St. Louis. And we felt this was the only way to go to try and stop this.
Right.
And as we met with our attorneys, we discovered there was Medicaid law involved here also.
Let's tease our audience with another segment and find out about Medicaid law and the impact that it might have on Day One PACT and other organizations like them. It's not just Day One PACT. It's not just because I'm friends with the CEO of Day One PACT, Steve Boise. But we'll find out more when we come back. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show, 720 WGN. We're so happy you're here. You are listening to the Patty Vasquez Show, and we are in the Allstate Skyline Studio with the CEO of Day One PACT, Steve Boise, and we've been talking about the services that are in jeopardy for so many people in the community of Western Suburbs, but not just for the people that you serve in
That's
Lyle
correct.
And Warrenville and places like that, but this is really going to affect people all over the state, isn't it?
It's statewide, absolutely. As we were talking about earlier, a group of agencies decided to come together to file a lawsuit because we all faced similar situations. So the two agencies, one is Western Illinois Service Coordination, which is out of the Macomb area,
mm-hmm.
and then Central Illinois Service Access, which is based in Lincoln, Illinois. Altogether, we're serving about 6,000 people a year in close to 20 counties.
Before we go on and talk about Medicaid and the impact that's having, I want to let folks know who live in those communities that this is important to you. And this is anybody who lives in Illinois.
Right.
But I also don't want to scare anybody about losing their services. However, I don't know what to say. Where do they stand if they hear about
nobody's going
this?
To lose services. And,
okay.
And you're right. I don't want to misstate the situation. All these services are being transferred to new agencies.
Right.
And I know all the executive directors, and they're all fine people.
I know that you try to be a little humble about the work that you do. When you disrupt the continuation of the way things go, it is such chaos for a family that is already living in a state of emergency.
Yes.
We're talking about anybody who maybe has a baby that was born medically fragile. Maybe you have a child who was involved in an accident, now has a disability. Maybe you have an adult child who is unable to live independently. This is a whole wide range of individuals throughout the state of Illinois who it's about support. It's not about propping people up or giving them handouts. This is about taking care of our most vulnerable. This is how we say who we are as Illinoisans.
Right. And ensuring that that continuity of care is continued. You know, it's really interesting when you contrast what the state has done in two different systems. So on the one hand, the early intervention system, which provides services to kids from 0 to 3.
It's intense. Let me tell you, that's intense stuff.
It is intense stuff.
Yeah, it's important, yes.
And we do a fabulous job in that, not just the state, but our agency. However, there are 25 agencies that provide these services statewide. Those services were just rebid this past September. The state did not make one change to the number of coordination entities across the state. The state said, no, we need the 25 because that allows for local granularity, a connection to local areas. And yet, a different division of the same department, Department of Human Services, says, no, we need fewer service coordination agencies for the adults.
Oh, no.
The inconsistency is indefensible as far as I'm concerned.
Because there's so much less once a child leaves the high school system. Like, for example, Declan will graduate from his program when he's 21 years old.
Right.
And then, what do you do? And
you'd be on the waiting list.
Well, and I'll be older. And taking care of an adult at that point who most likely, which is one of the reasons why I haven't done CrossFit in a while, but it was to stay strong because I'm going to need assistance at some point in my life.
Well, Patty, I don't think most people realize that there are still close to 19,000 people on the waiting list for services post-high school age.
Right.
Now, sometimes people will say, if we had the old state hospitals back, we wouldn't have the waiting
list. Right, you just dump them there.
Right. But the state closed them for a variety of reasons, not the least of which the Supreme Court said you can't do it anymore. And what the state has done has not followed through. This is my high horse here. It has not followed through on its responsibility to ensure that those services are there for people. The state is in an ongoing lawsuit with the federal government, and they are aiming to get people off the waiting list within 5 years. But think about saying that to a family that comes to us for the first time. Their child's just turned 21, and they say, my son's graduating in June. What can we do for him? Because school's ending. And we say, we'll put you on the waiting list, and in about 5 years, you'll get services.
I also I cannot emphasize this enough. If you know someone in your community that has a child, a family that has a child with a disability, please talk to them about getting on the PUNS list
Absolutely.
As soon as possible.
Every school, every high school in this state knows how to refer you to the local case management agency that will get you on the PUNS list.
And for those who don't know, PUNS stands for the Prioritization for the Urgency of Needs and Services.
Right.
Do you see me close my eyes trying to remember? I was like,
only
trying to
Only government can come up with a title like that.
Illinois in particular.
Well, it actually came from Pennsylvania. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so
I can
blame them.
I had to close my eyes so I could see the letterhead from all the mail I get from them far as you have to call in and check in and you have to update your information. And we've done that since Declan was born because I ran into somebody who urged me to do this so that when he ages out of the system, he will hopefully have some support.
Right.
So I cannot urge this enough. Anyway, so let's make sure that we talk about Medicaid and the role that plays in Day One Pact and the agencies like
Medicaid
you.
Is what funds the whole system.
Mm-hmm.
Federal dollars allow for this funding to occur. You know, under Medicaid law, a person has to reside in a nursing home, but there's something called a waiver that allows people to get those federal dollars to be used for community services. And that is the lifeline for all services throughout the state.
Right.
And what that means then is that the state has to follow Medicaid regulations. You can't just apply decisions and write policies willy-nilly and ignore that. And that's part of what our lawsuit is getting at. That we believe, as we've talked about this with our attorneys, that the state did not follow Medicaid regulation in bidding this out.
Well,
that's why we're suing in federal court.
So how do people get involved if they want to know? First, they want to know more about Day One Pact, because you are providing services. You will continue to do so until otherwise.
Absolutely. Until informed. July 1st for that program. Early right. intervention will continue to do.
Right. But. So how do people get a hold of you? And if they want to help, maybe they want to reach out and connect with you directly. How do they reach you?
Well, the easiest way is to, first of all, go to our website, mm-hmm. which is dayonepact.org.
Is it spelled out one or is it the number one?
O-N-E.
O-N-E.
D-A-Y-O-N-E. P-A-C-T.
.org.
.org.
Excellent. And then you mentioned calling their legislators.
Right. That was what I was going to say next.
Well, maybe you told me that off the air. Or I just, in my head, I'm always telling people to call their legislators.
At this point, while that House bill is not moving, it's not dead. And they could call their legislators and say, hey, we want you to move on House Bill 844. That would be helpful.
Okay. So House Bill 844.
Right.
And this is the folks that are going to have their lives disrupted. It's so hard for me to explain.
Yes.
Because it's not tangible. And I don't want people to know what it's like. This is not something I would wish on anybody.
Right, exactly.
As I mentioned, my family has been in a state of emergency since the moment Declan was born. And sometimes you come up for air and then you find out about stories like this.
Right.
I still continue to contend that there are families that will suffer for years as a result of what happened over the last few years when it came to financing, providing
the system
the
hasn't recovered from the budget battles that we saw over the last few years. And I know that the new administration is attempting to remedy that, but it can't be remedied immediately.
I wish I knew someone who knew the governor. Wait a minute. I know something. But here's the thing. It's not like a wave of the wand necessarily,
right.
but it's a fundamental need to look at this and go, well, why are you just arbitrarily changing the rules or even sort of putting it to the side in a disorganized way?
Right. And why are you changing things that aren't really working to get more people into services? There are two major issues that face this state with regard to how we care for people with developmental disabilities. That first issue is getting people into services.
Right.
Everything else is a moot issue until you get into services. But then the second issue is paying for those services adequately. We need people who have disabilities often need support staff.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're only going to pay them $10 an hour, in an economy like ours, you're not going to get staff.
Well, and that was the tragedy of that story that the Chicago Tribune had written 2 years ago about caregivers that were leaving people basically tied in their beds in their own feces.
Yeah.
There was one patient who was beaten to death because he stole a cookie.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's not because they were paid low. It's because they weren't able to recruit people who were better qualified and could handle the job. It's a high-stress job, too.
Absolutely.
So, I feel like I always hesitate. I get such, it's not a lot of backlash I get from listeners, but it's the anger that I get from some folks. And I'm sure you have experienced this as well. And I don't know, I've asked people to listen with love, but some people simply won't. They hear the financial part. And again, and it's not just that when you invest in people, you save lives, but it is also an investment in the future. The more we do sooner, the less expensive it will actually be. I don't want my son to be a burden on anybody. I wish that I didn't need help. I don't have the sort of resources that it takes to take care of this beautiful life in my home. You know? So,
or wherever the next step will be.
Right. Whatever the next step is.
Yeah.
So let's help Steve Boise and the folks with Day One Pact, you know, make a brighter day for so many people in the community. Get involved. Call your legislator. Let them know that HB 844 is important to you. Is there a place where there's information about this situation specifically?
If you go to our website, we're going to have some of it on there soon.
Okay.
I've been busy.
I understand.
In a lawsuit, I haven't had it done yet. But
PattyVasquez.com went away somehow because I wasn't paying attention, so I still have to build a new website. So
my email is on there. Anybody has questions, you can email me at S, like Steve, Boise, B-O-I-S-S-E, at dayonepact.org.
Thank you so much. And not just for coming in tonight, but for always doing so much for the people who need it the most.
Thank you, Patty.
Thank you. More after this on 720 WGN.